Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball-related from Monday, June 22nd. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league. And we'll kick things off by saying that we were lucky to come away with no injuries on Monday. So we'll move straight into the transaction, starting off with starting pitcher Alan Rangel, who was recalled from the minors to pitch in bulk relief for the Phillies in our nation's capital. He tossed five innings, allowing five hits with one run, no walks, and four Ks, inducing eight whiffs with 22% CSW across 72 pitches. Rangel went 75% four-seamers and changeups. His heater command up and glove side was pretty impressive. And while his 20 inches of IVB on that four-seamer is eye-catching, it's more a product of his incredibly high arm angle. He didn't have great command of his off-speed stuff, as way too many changeups and breakers landed upstairs, which is not where you want those. He's got a bit of Trey Savage to him with the incredibly high arm angle, but I don't expect Rangel to be a streaming option too often. He will, however, stick in the rotation with Andrew Painter in the minors. Reliever Bryce Wilson was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Next, we have starting pitcher Brandon Woodruff, who was activated from the 15-day IL after missing about 2 months with shoulder inflammation. He started in Cincinnati, tossing six shutout innings, allowing just one hit with no walks and 10 strikeouts. He induced 10 whiffs with 32% CSW across 79 pitches. And Woodruff did not miss a beat in his return from the IL. Four-seamers and sinkers were dominant upstairs, and he will be worth rostering everywhere and starting every week. But don't expect this level of performance from Woodruff moving forward. He was lucky to rack up double-digit strikeouts with just 10 whiffs, thanks to an incredibly high 83% put away rate. He was also lucky to go 8-for-9 on outs on balls in play, despite the majority of the hits, the balls put in play against him being hard contact. It's great to see Woodruff get right back to pitching well, though, and I'm excited to see what he does in his next start. Reliever Drew Rahm was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, we have DH Jorge Soler, who was activated from the 10-day IL after missing a couple of weeks with an oblique strain. Soler will return to being the Angels' everyday designated hitter, as second baseman Nick Madrigal was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Next, outfielder Mickey Moniak was activated from the 10-day IL after missing a month with ankle tendonitis. Moniak will return to being on the strong side of a right field platoon for the Rockies with Tyler Freeman. Outfielder Sterling Thompson was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, catcher Kyle Teal was activated from the 60-day IL after missing all season with an LCL sprain and a hamstring strain. Teal will be on the strong side of a catching platoon for the White Sox with Drew Romo on the short side. And catcher Edgar Caro was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And in terms of news, starting pitcher Shane Bieber, who was expected to make his season debut yesterday, is now expected to be activated from the 60-day IL today to make his season debut versus the Astros. Bieber has missed all year with elbow inflammation, and he's worked up to five innings in each of his last two rehab starts, but there's still that still ill factor. But after seeing what Woodruff did in his return to the majors after spending time on the IL, I think should be pretty safe trusting Bieber versus the Astros. And lastly, shortstop Ellie De La Cruz is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL today after missing 3 weeks with a strained hamstring. De La Cruz will reclaim his everyday shortstop role for the Reds. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Monday, a day in which we had just 12 games as the matchup between the Cubs and Mets was postponed due to inclement weather. We'll start off with our hitters, leading off with third baseman Cobey Mayo, who helped the Orioles to win in LA against the Angels, going 1-for-4 with a run, a home run, and three runs batted in. It was his 10th homer, and it traveled 368 feet at 113 miles per hour. Mayo has proven to be a reliable power producer this year, as he's on pace for more than 20 dingers, but he's not well-rounded, as Mayo is batting below the Mendoza line because he strikes out nearly a third of the time. I don't expect the batting average to improve much because of his fly ball approach and all those strikeouts, but he's doing everything to support his power. Since homering for the first time in late April, Mayo's produced a 13% barrel rate, which is solid, but not as solid as his 99th percentile max exit velocity, 97th percentile hard hit rate, 96th percentile average exit velocity, and a 92nd percentile bat speed. All of those are big factors in producing power and are big indicators that he will continue to produce power. Expect Mayo to be a significant homer contributor moving forward while also being a significant batting average drain in the middle of the Orioles lineup. And lastly, we have shortstop Ezekiel Duran, who helped the Rangers to win in Miami, going 1-for-4 with a run, a home run, and two runs batted in. It was his sixth homer of the year and traveled 407 feet at 103 miles per hour. We haven't seen Duran be much of an offensive threat since 2023, but he's chosen a good time to bounce back as the Rangers deal with injuries and ineffectiveness in their infield. Duran's 111 WRC plus this year matches the career high he set 3 years ago, but it might be completely BABIP driven. He doesn't hit the ball particularly hard, suggesting he won't maintain his 758 OPS. He is walking more than ever thanks to a more patient approach, and he's pulling the ball more than he has since his rookie campaign, allowing him to tap into his limited power. His positional flexibility is also awesome, but I wouldn't be surprised if Duran's lack of power and limited contact ability become more obvious in the coming weeks. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Monday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances. And boy, were there a lot of them on Monday. We'll start it off with Kumar Rocker, who helped the Rangers to win in Miami, tossing five innings, allowing five hits and two earned runs, walking nobody while fanning nine. He induced 20 whiffs with 46% CSW across 76 pitches and earned the golden goal as he led baseball with those 20 whiffs for the gallows pull and earned the king cole by leading baseball with the 46% CSW. Rocker had his best slider in this one, and the Marlins were more than willing to chase it, allowing it to induce a whopping 17 whiffs despite only a quarter of his sliders landing in the zone, while cutters and sinkers avoided damage inside the zone. Kumar Rocker was awesome, but unfortunately, despite 70% weak contact and 70% ground balls, half of the balls in play against him turned into hits, and that's just super unlucky, which suggests that he should have been even better in the start than he already was. I don't think we can expect Rocker to face aggressive teams so willing to chase his slider in the future, meaning he's not somebody that I think is a must roster even after this impressive performance. But I love Rocker showing this whiff ceiling that we've only seen from him sporadically this year. It's risky, but he may be worth flipping the coin on in Toronto next. Now we've got Brady Singer, who did all he could, but the Reds lost to the Brewers. He went seven shutout innings, allowing two hits and two walks while fanning seven, inducing 13 whiffs with 39% CSW across 106 pitches. And opposite Brandon Woodruff, Singer made it a pitcher's duel. He lost, but that wasn't without an incredible effort. Unfortunately, we didn't see the changes we want to make us believe in Singer. He's a guy who's a sinker and breaker. He throws a slider and a sweeper. That's just not enough. Those two pitches, those technically three pitches, aren't enough. So we're always looking for that third pitch that makes him, that gives him sustainable success against left-handed batters. That should be the cutter and four seamer, but we saw just nine cutters and four seamers from Singer in this one. And he was lucky a passive Brewers lineup allowed him to steal 14 called strikes with sinkers. And he was just as fortunate to return 14 outs on 16 balls in play. I'm not trusting this. Sometimes Singer gets lucky while having his best sinker and breaker command. That's what happened here, but he's not worth chasing in Pittsburgh next. Now we've got Kyle Bradish, who helped the Orioles to win in LA against the Angels, tossing eight scoreless innings, allowing six hits with one walk and nine strikeouts. He induced 13 whiffs with 36% CSW across 101 pitches. And that's back-to-back electric performances from Bradish, who fanned 12 batters last time while pitching into the eighth frame. He's been volatile all year, though, and his 1.45 whip paired with a sub-4 ERA actually supports that claim a lot. I think we'll see a version of Bradish closer to this successful version more often moving forward than the one who struggled with command at times. His velocity was up a tick here, and he commanded sliders and curveballs well while getting away with plenty of sinkers in the zone. And even with the hard-hitting Nationals up next, I don't think we're thinking twice about starting Bradish in that one. Next, we've got Jake Bennett, who did all he could, but the Red Sox lost in Colorado. He tossed 6 shutout innings, allowing 4 hits while walking nobody and striking out 9. He induced 15 whiffs with 33% CSW across 72 pitches, and Bennett had his best start of his career in Coors. His changeup performed well despite the effects of the elevation as he kept it low and arm side for 4 whiffs, but his most impressive skill was his four-seamer locations as he spotted them upstairs all day, allowing it to induce 6 whiffs despite unimpressive shape. And if Bennett can carry the command of four-seamers and changeups that we saw in this one with support from sinkers, cutters, and sweepers in his next start versus the Yankees, we can trust Bennett as a streamer in LA against the Angels afterwards. And lastly, we've got Foster Griffin, who helped the Nationals to win against the Phillies. He tossed 7 1/3 innings, allowing 4 hits and 1 run, walking nobody while striking out 9. He induced 16 whiffs with 32% CSW across 105 pitches. It appeared as if Griffin would regress and settle in as a Toby after allowing 14 runs across a pair of starts in mid-May, but he's bounced back in impressive fashion with a 1.78 ERA, a 0.88 whip, and a 26% strikeout rate in 6 starts since then, settling in as one of the most reliable Tobys, or one of the most reliable Hollies this season. I think the strikeout upside that he's shown makes him more of a Holly than a Toby. But the real question is, will his kitchen sink approach continue to produce the exceptional results that have allowed him to get away with so many stranded runners this year? We'll all find out if Griffin can keep it going in Baltimore next. But the great performances didn't even end there. There were plenty more. And if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Monday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Will Vess recorded his second save with a perfect 4-out save. Kenley Jansen might have been getting the day off after pitching back-to-back days, but this was the second day after that, so they might have been giving him 2 days off. He's somebody who's dealt with all kinds of weird injuries recently in the latter stages of his career, so they're probably taking it easy on Kenley Jansen. So Will Vess got the vulture save on Monday. Alex Lang pitched a perfect 9th for his 6th save. Jacob Latz had a scoreless 4-out save, his 14th save of the year. Clayton Beter had a scoreless 9th for his 6th save. Louis Varland had his 16th save with a hitless 9th. Joel Kunal worked around the zombie runner scoring in the 10th for his 5th save. Trevor McGill pitched a perfect 9th in that one in a tie game, and he earned his 2nd win. Tanner Scott pitched a perfect 9th for his 10th save. Riley O'Brien pitched a perfect 9th for his 19th save, and Mason Miller recorded his National League leading 21st save with a scoreless 9th. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Tony Santion allowed 2 runs, only one of which was earned while pitching the 10th in a tie game and was tagged with his 4th loss. Sir Anthony Dominguez allowed 2 runs in the 9th to blow his 5th save. Cade Smith was given the task of recording the final 5 outs of the game, but he allowed 2 runs in the 9th to take his 1st loss. And lastly, Aroldis Chapman allowed 3 runs on 4 hits without recording an out in the 9th to blow his 1st save and take his 1st loss. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Tuesday, June 23rd, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Parker Messick versus Sean Burke. Burke was just incredible in his last start against the Yankees, and Parker Messick was just as good in his last start as well. It should be a good interdivision matchup there, Parker Messick versus Sean Burke. In terms of probable starters, we've got 5 guys in the auto starts tier, including Messick. We've also got Jesus Luzardo in our nation's capital, Shane McClanahan versus the Royals, Carlos Rodon in Detroit, and George Kirby in Pittsburgh. Our probably starts tier has 6 guys, and our questionable starts tier has 7, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in the aforementioned Sean Burke versus the Guardians. Burke was great, as I mentioned, against the Yankees last time out. He's got a very underrated arsenal. His fastball is incredible. The rest is not, but if he throws enough strikes with his secondaries, he should do well, especially against this diminished Guardians lineup without Chase DeLauder or Jose Ramirez. I'd also keep an eye out for former Guardian Shane Bieber versus the Astros. It is his season debut return from the IL, but he's looked solid in his rehab outings, and he's not rostered nearly enough, and I think he's going to be a solid guy to start here in Houston. In terms of hitter suggestions, I'd look at Brewers and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark. The ballpark is very conducive to offense, and we'll see Brandon Sproat square off against Nick Lodolo. Sproat has a 5.94 ERA, and Lodolo has a 6.12 ERA. I'd also try to get Red Sox and Rockies hitters in Coors, as we'll see Sonny Gray square off against Sean Sullivan in that one. Now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Sir Anthony Dominguez has pitched on back-to-back days, but so have both Grant Taylor and Brian Hudson. So Sean Newcomb or Jordan Hicks would be the top options for the White Sox on Tuesday. Jacob Lats has pitched in three of the past 4 days. So if the Rangers want to give him a day off, they won't turn to Jacob Junis, who's pitched on back-to-back days. So we'll likely see them turn to Tyler Alexander or Cole Wynn. Tony Santion has pitched on back-to-back days. So one of TJ Antone, Brock Burke, Pierce Johnson, or Sam Moll should be the top option for a save. It's really just any one of them. They all just have one save on the season, and the Reds bullpen has not been great this year. Lastly, we've got Riley O'Brien, who's pitched on back-to-back days, but so have George Soriano, Jojo Romero, and Ryan Stanek. So maybe Gordon Graceffo is the top option, but we could see the Cardinals push one of these guys 3 days in a row. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.